We're super excited to have Polly Pope back with us for the second time already this year. She's just a wealth of knowledge, and we're so thankful that she's able to come and share with us this morning. So please welcome Polly back up.
Good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing? Good. Hey. I just like blew in here. I didn't even look around the room yet. It's good to see everybody's faces. This is like the perfect day for something like this. I don't know if I shared this last time, but I didn't have this when my kids were like toddlers in preschool. And my kids, they're only three, five, and seven. But so when I had a rainy day and a bunch of little kids just crawling all over me and whiny and snotty, I didn't have a place like this to come and be fed. So you guys are certainly blessed. I'm always excited to be here. So, okay. Like she said, my name's Polly Pope. I have three sweet little boys. I'm married to David Pope, who is Randy's youngest son. I always like to say that he's the coolest one. Because Matt, the other son, is a film producer. So that's like, everybody's like, oh, you're married to the movie guy? I'm like, no, he just like sells offices. But he's the coolest one. So, Dave and I are married. We have these three awesome, wonderful, tiring, chaotic little boys. Wyatt is 7, Barrett is 5, and Grayson is 3. Wyatt and Barrett are here at Perimeter School, and kindergarten and first grade, and Grayson's home with me, and goes to PCBC a couple mornings a week. So, Gail asked me to speak, and Vicky, but asked me to speak on the concept of raising God-first children in a me-first world. So I wanted to start, break the ice a little bit. Have you guys heard of Brian Regan?
Yes.
He's the old, yeah, he's like, so have you seen the clip, Beware the Me Monster? Okay, this is just funny. All right, kick back. This is just like a minute and a half, but just listen to this guy and enjoy this little skit, and we'll jump in. All right, well, we're going to omit the clip. Sorry, I was trying to provide a little comic relief for you guys this morning. But I can explain to you the concept that this comedy sketch is intending. Brian Regan basically says, beware of the me monster, right? So, like, there's a me monster inside of all of us. There's that guy at the dinner party that's like, can't wait for you to stop talking so he can like jump in and say, I can start that story. I can. And so it's like, okay, man, all right, like you win. But how it's just so funny, even as adults, like we have this monster inside of us. It's like me, I want to tell you more. Let me tell you more about myself. And how much more true is that with kids, right? Like, how selfish, how me first, how self-seeking are kids? It's just so, they don't know how to filter it. So anyway, that was the whole concept of that little skit. But before I jumped in to talk about our kids and how we can raise them to be God first, I wanted us to do some self-reflection of our own self, right? So it's like that everybody says more is caught than taught. Our kids pick up more how we act and live before them than what we're saying to them and teaching them and rules and with our words sometimes. They see how we're living. So if you and I as moms are living selfishly, if we're living me first, our kids are picking that up. So go with me on this. Okay, so like I said, clearly I'm a mom like you guys. We're all catapulted into this role that we're like, have no clue what we're doing, if we're being honest. When David and I had Wyatt and the nurse left the room, we were like, no, like, don't leave us. And especially heightened when we left the hospital, it was like, I can't believe, like, that hospital just gave us this baby. Like, what, are they crazy? So we're catapulted in this new and forever role. We're not knowing what we don't know. There's differing opinions around every single corner. Your body shape changes. You can't hold your tinkle for as long as you used to be able to. You officially no longer have any independence. When you get a break, it's nice, but you're going to have to return to kids that want to just suck the life out of you, you know, and they're ready. They're ready right when you walk in the door to just jump back on you. And in a moment of brutal honesty, you might have all been sitting in your nursing chair in your PJs at 3 o'clock in the afternoon with your hair dirty and staring at the wall, perhaps, saying, thinking, what have I done? What have I done with all these kids? Where did they come from? I knew that I was in for it as far as just living, self-seeking parenting style. When my well-meaning mother-in-law bought me this really precious sign from All Inspired, I actually brought it today. It reads, "There are these boys who stole my heart. They call me Mom," which is really sweet, right? But what I saw it read was, "There are these boys who stole my life. They call me Mom over and over and over and over and over again." Or when I found out my third son, Grayson, was due on my birthday, I looked over to David and I said, "That's it. They've officially taken everything from me. I don't even have my own birthday anymore." He came 2 days early. I'm like, "Thank you, Lord. You're looking out for me." I was thankful for my children. I am thankful for my children. I'm obsessed with them, really. But I was hopeless at the same time because I had embraced this me-first approach to motherhood, right? I was still trying to hold on to so many of my idols, control, order, freedom, independence. That was big for me. And you just can't do that when you have dependents, people depending on you. You can't have that as much anymore. All the things I'd once held so dear, like those I just mentioned, sleep, a completed to-do list, they had all vanished, and I was left holding three little boys in one major decision. Was I going to continue to let my flesh fight with all of its might to stay alive and to keep my idols alive, or was I going to surrender to this new role God had called me to with selflessness? So it was hard. It was hard to see that. I don't know if y'all feel that way, that you're trying. Maybe it's just me. I will be the first to say, I feel like, and I said this last time I spoke here, I feel like God made me a mom so I can make other moms feel better about themselves. Like, no, I'm so much worse than you. Like, I have so much more sin than you. My kids have brought it out. Like, there are days where I'm just like, oh my gosh, why? Why me, Lord? But there's so much beauty that has entered into my life because I've had children. I'm like, even one time I remember before I had kids, a D group leader told me, like, okay, well, what are areas in your life where you feel like you need the Lord? And I was like, I mean, I know I need him for my salvation. She's like, okay, but like, tell me more about your life. So I just went on to kind of tell her where I was at. And Dave and I, we had a good marriage. We didn't fight much. I mean, it was just pretty sweet deal. We have good families, you know, and I just went on, and she's like, wow, it kind of sounds like you don't really need God in your day-to-day, and that really convicted me. This was years ago, and I was like, that's true. Like, I've kind of arranged my life where I still love the Lord, but it's true. I have sort of just made myself just a cushy life where I don't really have to depend on anybody. And that all changed 7 years ago for me. So it really was, my children have been such a gift in that sense of really teaching me that I must depend on the Lord and Him only. So that's just a little tangent. But I wanted to speak this morning out of Exodus 32. This has been like a super awesome chapter for me. I started reading through the Bible at the beginning of the year, and I cannot get off Exodus 32. I'm just so drawn to it. I keep going back to it and back to it because I can relate so much with the Israelites in this. So spare me, because this is God's word, and we're all women in here that need to hear it. So I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to unpack it, but I hope that this can refresh you as you listen. So Exodus 32, it says, it's the golden calf. When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, he was up there for 40 days and 40 nights meeting with God on the top of Mount Sinai, They gathered around and came to Aaron, who was left in charge, and said, "Come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him. Where'd he go? He brought us up out of Egypt, and he's gone. He's been gone for 40 days. We want to worship something. We are dying to worship something." So Aaron answered them and said, "Okay, take off your gold earrings. Tell your wives to take off their earrings, your daughters, everything. Bring me all the gold, and I will fashion it into the shape of a calf." So they brought it all, they melted it all down, and Aaron fashioned their jewelry, their gold, into a calf. When Aaron saw this, he also built an altar in front of the calf and announced that there will be a festival to the Lord tomorrow. So then the Lord, who was up meeting with Moses, said, he stopped the meeting. He said, "Okay, go down to your people, whom you brought up out of Egypt, because they've become corrupt. They've been quick to turn away from what I commanded them and turned their jewelry into a calf. They bow down to it, they sacrifice to it, and have said, 'These are your gods, O Israel. These are who brought you up out of Egypt.'" So God was furious. And Moses said, and God, actually, I'm going to kind of unpack this, but God said, "I've seen these people, they're stiff-necked. Leave me alone now, Moses, so that my anger may burn against them and that I may destroy them. Then I will make you into a great nation." And Moses said, "Lord, don't destroy them. Because if you do, the Egyptians will say, 'This God is evil.' Like, he literally just saved these people to bring them out into the wilderness to then kill them." And so Moses said, "Don't do that. That's what the Egyptians will think of you. And you are a God of love. You love them. That's why you saved them. Not so you could destroy them yourself. God, please relent and turn from your fierce anger. Relent. Do not bring disaster on your people." And then it says in verse 14 that God did relent, and he did not bring his people the disaster that he threatened. But Moses from there went down, and he handled his people. So this is the part that I love the most. He went, and he saw, and he heard. He's coming down the mountain. He heard the celebrations. He heard the party. He heard the worshiping. Then he gets down from the mountains. He sees it with his own eyes. So he's hearing it, he's seeing it, and he gets ticked. And he's like, he goes to Aaron, and he's like, "What's happening here?" And Aaron's like, "Well, the people were getting restless. You know, like, they wanted to worship something. And so we built a calf, but Moses also built an altar for the Lord." So it's kind of like we're giving the people what they want, and we're still sort of being committed to the Lord, you know? And Moses is like, "No." So he takes the calf and he burns it. Do you guys know this story? He burns the calf and then turns it into dust, mixes it up with water, and makes the people drink it. And the whole point of this, drinking the idol, is to show that they cannot, this calf cannot nourish them. This calf cannot give them life. This calf cannot rescue them out of slavery. That resonates with me so much. The things that I look to, what's my golden calf that I'm bowing down to, that I'm saying, "This will satisfy me, this will nourish me, this will be good for me." What is that? Because I have so many, right? So this is Moses saying, you know, these idols have no nutritional substance. Seriously, they cannot sustain you. You drink it, it goes in one end, it comes out the other, it will not give you life. So my first question to you, we're going to have a little bit of table talk, is what are the ways, what's your idol, first of all? Is it control, order, body image, need for appreciation, approval? You want to be recognized? Does anybody realize that I swept the floor for the fifth time today and it's only 10 o'clock? Do you want financial stability? Do you want more from your husband? What is your idol? What is your golden calf? So talk about the ways that you might be living a me-first life, specifically in this way. And then I want you to write down your idol. I want you to write down what your golden calf might be. And then after you write it down, next to it, I want you to say, "This cannot keep me alive, and this cannot nourish me." So we're going to do that. And here's the question. Take a couple minutes. Share with your tables if you'd like, or just process it internally, whatever's best for you. Do y'all in here, do y'all ever share out loud? Do you do that? You do? Would anybody feel comfortable sharing what a golden calf might be for them? I mean, I know that's personal, but I think we might be surprised. We could all probably relate. Right. Just their well-being and, yeah, absolutely. So your own children and just personal control. Any others? This cannot nourish me and this cannot satisfy me or keep me alive. So housekeeping, or tidiness, cleanliness, you can kind of see a visible proof that you did something that day. Yeah. And then what happens when your kids run through it and just terrorize it, right? It's like, rah! And you're like, that's my golden calf. Yeah, exactly. That's my idol right there. Yep. Moses would make us drink that, right? I'm glad we didn't live back then. But anything else? What about nap time? That was such an idol for me. I'm like, I thought I could move mountains to get my kids in bed. I would turn into this like superhuman that was just like, all right, you're down. All right, you're down. All right, you're down. All right, I got my 2 hours. Nobody bother me. That was huge for me, that idol. I mean, I would like shut off a friend mid-conversation if it was 12:45 at the park. I'm like, yeah, I got to roll. It's nap time, you know. So that was a big one for me when my kids all napped. Now they don't, and the interesting thing is I have such freedom. Like, I feel like I am not so frantic to do anything or to stay on schedule. It's like, I don't have anything to rush home for. Let's just enjoy this beautiful day, and let's just, you know, hang out, or let's go to lunch and just talk and talk to our waitress. We have nothing to get home for. So it's been a cool shift for me to realize, wow, that was a big idol for me. Okay, so that was good. Just taking a look at ourselves, and I hope you will continue to think about the way that both God and Moses handled the Israelites when they were prone to wander or worship something else besides God. Call it what it is. Say, this is my idol, and get rid of it. So now let's take a look at our kids. Okay, why? Oh, that's the next question. Don't look. Why is it important to teach our children to live God first? Okay, I think this is obvious, but we cannot hear this enough. Our children must learn from the earliest age possible that life is not about them. This will help them to secure just healthy personal relationships, from siblings to friendships to marriage, college roommates. I mean, this is like a life lesson they need to learn well. Like, look at Jacob and Esau, right? It's like the most unhealthy sibling rivalry. They're selling birthrights or stealing birthrights and hunting down for literal blood. It's like, I will kill you. I will literally kill you. And I'm just like, Esau thought life was all about him, you know? Where were his parents to teach them, right? Or to teach him that? No, but so look at something like that, Jacob and Esau type of tension. And then look at an approach like Jesus, like Philippians 2, right? I was talking to my small group about this week. Consider others better than yourself. So if you really live that out, if our children really live that out, then that would mean that Wyatt would look at Barrett and say, you're better than me. And Barrett would look at Grayson and say, you're better than me. And Grayson would look at Wyatt and say, you're better than me. I consider you better than myself. So you take the toy first, or you have the last pack of gummies, or you can ride in the special seat in the car because you're better than me. Not in a self-depreciating way, but in a humility, sharing in the likeness of Christ kind of way. And that is beautiful. Like, that is a measure of success when our kids can have that attitude of Philippians 2, consider your brother better than yourself. Whenever they get in a tiff or a fight, let's just call it what it is. It's an all-out brawl, okay? So I make them say, I'm sorry. What I did to you was wrong. Will you forgive me? You're my brother, and you deserve better than that. So I make them say it. Repeat after me. I'm sorry, Barrett. I'm sorry, Barrett. Will you forgive me? Will you forgive me? You're my brother. You deserve better than that. Because I tell them, the world out there is going to be so mean to you. And I don't like it, but I can't control it. But what I can control is how we live in here, and we will live as best of our ability as Christ lived and as he calls us to live, because it's hard out there. So teaching them that life is not about them will help them secure healthy personal relationships. Also, it will help them have a healthy worldview, that God weaves all things together for his glory. When we're living in this culture now that says, you have your truth, I have my truth. Let's just agree on that. They can say, no, like, God's truth is ultimate truth. We put God first in our family. We don't put me first. We don't put what I think is true. We put what God says is true. So that will help as well, help them to have and maintain a healthy biblical worldview. And then the sad kind of thing, too, is, especially with all this YouTube kids stuff, does anybody's kids watch YouTube kids in here? No? We haven't done it yet. But y'all have seen the news and all that about this weird, you haven't seen this? The hack? So there's basically this hack that has entered into some of these YouTube kids' channels, and it's just teaching that this weird, creepy-looking lady. Her image comes on the screen in the middle of the kids' show. This is all happening right now. Like, and it's been in the news in the past couple days. Somebody hacked in and did, I mean, it's terrifying. Like, the girl's face is terrifying. And then it teaches them how to, like, slit their wrists the right way, and it's completely, completely evil. So, I mean, just Google it. It's all over the news right now. But they will never, our kids, we can't, like I said, we can't control that. We can't control some hacker here or overseas hacking into a cartoon, Peppa Pig. That was one of the cartoons that they hacked into. Anyway, we can't control them, right? But how can we teach our kids to navigate this world of social media? Okay, so they're never going to know differently. They're never going to know what a normal phone was. They're never going to know that you couldn't have gotten Wi-Fi on an airplane. Like, they're never going to know anything like that, which means there's going to be higher self-focus, okay? Higher self-focus, more anxiety, more depression, off-the-charts comparison, off-the-charts exclusion. They must learn to shut this powerful mind game off, and the greatest way of doing that is to stay God-focused and not self-focused. Because media is going to continue to say, no, 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 focus on yourself, promote yourself. So this is why it's important to teach them to live God first. So another couple minutes for table talk. Do you believe and practice the importance of living a God first life in front of your children? Do you value that? Like I said, more is caught than taught. So are you living that out among your kids? Take 2 minutes just to think about that question. Write it down, talk about it if you'd like. All right. Okay, just thinking practically, I don't know if anybody thought of this, but one way to obviously show them that life is not all about them, and as a mom, as we model this before them, how's your relationship with your husband? You know, how are you doing as far as putting demands on him and expectations from him, and or are you putting him before you, right? Are you doing Philippians 2 towards your husband? That's a thing that your kids are watching is y'all's personal relationship. You know, you're modeling for that. Another thing is, what was I going to say? Oh, I totally blanked on it. Oh, yeah, is serving your children, right? So when you are down on the floor for the fifth time that day, sweeping up crumbs or picking up a half-eaten sandwich, you know, saying, hey, guys, it's my joy to serve you. Like, okay, does your flesh want to say that? Heck no. It's like, pick up your sandwich. And sometimes you do say that because that's good. They need to be responsible. But sometimes there are a few times where it's like, you know, oh, you left your shoes 3 stories up. Okay, and we're downstairs in the garage. Okay, hey, I would love to serve you right now. So I'm going to go grab those for you. Next time I want you to get them or be responsible enough to remember, but I'm happy to serve you in this. And just having a moment like that where they're not just like, oh, mom will do it for me, but saying like, hey, I'm choosing to serve you. I'm choosing an attitude of Christ for you because I love you. But obviously, you know, you can't be doing that all the time. You got to teach these kids how to act. But there are those moments of saying, hey, there's grace. And it's a joy to serve you. And I hope that you will have a heart to serve others one day. So there's that. So we've talked about why it's important to teach them to live God first. Now, what is important to teach them about living God first? There's so many things, but I just wanted to hone in on 2 specific things. The first one is about what's important is that only Jesus will satisfy you, okay? No matter what it is, it's hilarious because the other day, Gray, 3-year-old, really wanted Hot Wheels at Target. And it was what you would expect. I mean, it was, it's only a dollar. He knows how much it got. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, so I'm great, buddy. Like, you, I'm sorry. We're not going to get Hot Wheels every time we go to the store. We're just not. But I'm sorry, buddy. Like, Hot Wheels are never going to satisfy you. Only Jesus is going to satisfy you. I don't want Jesus to satisfy me. I want a Hot Wheel to satisfy me. I'm like, of course you do. Like, you're three, and I fully expect that from you. But I never know when he's going to start to understand that. So when my kids are babies, I'm like, that pasty is not going to satisfy you. That little toy is not going to satisfy you. And I train myself to say that. And it also is speaking truth to me, you know, because we have to be reminded the world is so saturated with quick fixes and things you want and glittery things. And it's like, that won't satisfy me. That won't satisfy me. That won't satisfy you or you. I know you really want chips and queso for the fifth time this week. Not going to satisfy you, you know. So just making that a part of your song in your house, that only Jesus will satisfy us. Even my seven-year-old, he got asked to play on this special sports team, and he was so, felt so honored. He was so excited. We were so proud of him, but I'm like, no, like, this is, you're still so young. This is so, you're so new to this sport. Like, let's go through the ropes. Let's figure this out. And he was bummed, but he's like, but I know that won't satisfy me. I'm like, you're seven. Like, what? God is so good and gracious. But I believe it's because I told him that. I've been telling him that since he was a kid, you know. So he's like, well, I'll just play to the best of my ability, and maybe they'll ask me again next year. I'm like, ching. That's awesome. Thank you, Lord. So that's important to teach them. And then the second thing is, from him, through him, and to him are all things. So if they can acknowledge that God is sovereign over all things, that is a huge win. Huge win. So, you know, my mother-in-law, she'll do little rewards for them if they learn certain catechisms, which is like good truth in their head. But it's even sweet to see them. The other night I was laying in bed with Bear and he had the hiccups. He's like, oh, why did God give me the hiccups? I'm like, from him, through him, and to him are all things, Bear. You got this. Like, that is, he just ascribes to God's sovereignty even in the hiccups, right? I'm like, that's awesome. So cute. I'm pretty sure it just has something to do with your GI tract. It's not, you know, no, I didn't say that. But no, so those two concepts, only Jesus will satisfy you guys, and from him, through him, and to him are all things. God is sovereign over everything. You can count on this. So last question of the day, can you identify the idols in your children's hearts? And if so, like the Hot Wheel for Gray, if so, what are they and how can you expose them to your kid in a loving and gentle but truth-filled way? Take 2 minutes. Alrighty. So we have talked about this morning why, we've talked about what to teach them, and we're going to finish up by talking about how to teach them to live, to teach our children to live a God-first life. So how do we teach them to put God first? Especially when, you know, they're kids, right? Like, they understand God, they get it, but they're kids, they're humans. And that's where I would say start, by saying, guess what is one of God's greatest creations? It's you. He created you. He formed you so perfectly. I think that is important for them to realize that, hey, you're not a robot and you're not just called to, like, you know, put God first all the time. It's just like an awesome thing that he's called us to, because you are one of his greatest creations. Something that my parents taught me from a young age, and I say it to my friends, I say it to my kids, I say it all the time. It's three things: know yourself, like yourself, and be yourself. I can hear my dad saying that as I'm getting out of the car to go to school every morning as a kid, as a second grader. That's what they would always say, and my mom. Polly, know yourself, like yourself, and be yourself, and everything else will be fine, right? Wrong. But it was so foundational for me just as a kid to say, hey, I know who I am. I know what makes me laugh. I know what makes me upset. I know what makes me feel special. I know who I am, and I like who I am. That was very important for me to say, you know, like these things about yourself. Like, God has made me, and he has made you, and he's made all of us completely different. Like, that is remarkable. So celebrate that. So to know yourself like yourself and to be yourself. I always go back to when I went wedding dress shopping with my mom. I'll never forget this. The second dress I tried on, I was like, I like this. And she's like, we like this dress too. Like, we got, this is our experience. You know, I'm like, no, I like this one. Because there are thousands of wedding dresses out there. And I like this one. And let's just go. And that was such an important thing. It's like, there's thousands of wedding dresses. There's thousands of people that's out there that are going to be smarter, or more athletic, or prettier, or happier, or kinder, and are more creative. And just saying to your children, like, but God made you. So who are you? Know who you are, like who you are, and be who you are. And you won't have to worry about comparing yourself to everybody else. So that was very important. I do like my kids to know that they are a part of God's masterpiece, like his story, that it's not God doesn't call us to self-neglect. He calls us to be a part of his story. He's created us for good, to do good works and to enjoy him. So that this is exciting. So that is the first thing I would say, how to teach them a God-first life is to celebrate that you're his greatest creation. And then practically, this is something I do with my boys all the time. We're outdoors as much as we can. We're soaking in his creation. We're pointing out ways that God makes things special. I'm sure you guys can relate the difference in your kid when they've been outside all day versus like in front of a TV all day. It's almost, you literally see them just turning into just brain dead, right? So when they're outside and just soaking in the vitamin D from the sunlight and splashing in the creek water, or throwing rocks or picking up sticks, even just painting outside. A lot of times I'll set up something outside, a craft or an activity, and just being outside painting or creating something themselves, that's one way to teach them how to live God first, just to acknowledge him. And then lastly, it's just to weave his purposes and intentions into your conversation as naturally as possible. Make God real to them, okay? So he is real. He's living and moving and active. He is everywhere. Jesus especially. Make Jesus real. Make him come to life to your children. I mean, that is like the most beautiful gift that we can give our kids, is to say, Jesus, like, people were like breaking open roofs and lowering their friends down so Jesus could touch them and heal them. And he did that. Like, that's real. Like, people, can you imagine putting your buddy on a rope and lowering him through a roof? You know, like, that's what people did. They were that desperate to see Jesus. Why? Well, because he was amazing. He's the most incredible man that walked our planet. He divided history in half. You know, like, he is real and he's for you. He died for you. So I would say, just make God real to them. Don't just expect them to know everything. Talk about it. Talk about him. Make him alive. So that's all I have this morning. I don't know if anybody has questions or not. That's totally fine. But we can either do a Q&A or you guys can just kick it. It's up to y'all.
What was the scripture reference for the
Romans? Is that in Romans? Yeah. No, I didn't say it. But it is either that or maybe one of the Corinthians. But I'll look that up for you. Does this concept seem overwhelming at all to teach your kids to live God first? Does it feel like it's you're just trying to like change diapers and put food on the table? Or do you feel like this is something that you can naturally apply? You do? All right. Thank you, guys. This was fun.